This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
We have new information about the January 6th pipe bomber. We're going to talk about that tonight. The secret police, Savannah Hernandez, Liz Wheeler, Mary Margaret is here. All that and more coming up on I'm Right. All right, before we get to the new information, honestly, amazing information about the January 6th pipe bomber that just came out, let's do a little background and kind of build up to it, shall we? Stuff we've talked about before. So a couple things we have to understand. First, in the Soviet Union, they had a secret police apparatus. And it took various names. You would probably know it as the KGB, but when Stalin was using it, it was the NKVD. Before that, it was the Cheka, whatever. They had a secret police apparatus. And this apparatus was not used to chase down drug dealers and murderers and rapists. It was used to chase down any political opposition or potential political opposition to the communists in power. In China, Mao had a cultural revolution. He mobilized millions of young people in the country. He didn't mobilize them to hunt down and beat up and murder rapists and murderers and thieves. He mobilized them to hunt down his political opposition. I could talk to you about Pol Pot. I could talk to you about the Stasi in East Germany. I could go on and on and on and on and on, but you understand, the communist has always and will always desired to use the power of the state against his domestic political opposition. He thinks about it all the time. When you think about things like the military or the FBI, which we're going to get to in a moment, you probably think about the military defending America, defeating our foreign adversaries, things like that. The communist doesn't think about that at all. He doesn't consider that at all. He sees all those tanks, all those guns, all those bombs, and he thinks, ooh, how could I use that against Republicans? He does. I know that's hard to hear, but he does. And the FBI specifically, which we're going to get to here. The communist doesn't look at the FBI and what it should do the way you do. When you look at the FBI, and I know you don't need any more help to hate the FBI, I'm sure you probably want them to hunt down drug dealers and murderers and serial killers and take down the mob and things like that. The communist doesn't care about any of those things. 35,000 FBI agents, all that power, all those badges, all those guns, what does he want them to do? He wants them to hunt down the political opponents of the communists, arrest them, destroy their lives. That's what he wants. That's why Democrats have spent years, the past couple decades, filling the FBI with committed communists. They wanted the FBI to go a new direction. Now, that brings us to the Biden administration. You are well aware of January 6th. At least you're well aware of the basic facts of it. Now, let's pause on that for a moment. You've heard of the Reichstag fire. We've talked about this before. The Reichstag was the Congress in Hitler's Germany. Congress. You see, Hitler had taken power, but he didn't have complete power, and there were still opposing parties chirping at him, opposing things he wanted to do. Congress burnt down one night. German citizens woke up and picked up the newspaper, and Congress burnt down. Oh, whoa. What to do? What to do? Immediately, Hitler pounced on it. Whether they did it or not, no one will ever really know. Immediately, Hitler pounced on it and used it to send the secret police of the state against his domestic political opposition, hunted them down, arrested them, killed them, and just like that, he had total power. Whatever you believe about January 6th, Democrats thought about it like their Reichstag fire. I know you think they're upset about it, and I know your stupid liberal Aunt Peggy is upset about it, but I promise you this, every communist in Washington, D.C. was thrilled about it. When they saw the tear gas, when they saw the anarchy that day, the busted out windows, they stood back and cheered because they knew it would give them the opportunity to do what they lay in bed dreaming about, sending the state after you. Here was Merrick Garland and Christopher Wray.
That attack, that siege, was criminal behavior, plain and simple, and it's behavior that we, the FBI, view as domestic terrorism. It's got no place in our democracy, and tolerating it would make a mockery of our nation's rule of law.
The Justice Department will hold all January 6 perpetrators at any level accountable under the law. Whether they were present that day or were otherwise criminally responsible for the assault on our democracy.
Did you know that the Federal Bureau of Investigation did this cell phone geolocating thing and the FBI was knocking on the doors of anybody who was even there that day? Did you think you had to hit a police officer or kick in the door? Oh, no, 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 no. The FBI came and paid you a visit if you were even present that day. Over 1,000 arrests. And if Biden had been reelected, the D.C. attorney promised there would be over 1,000 more. Hunting down innocent, crime-free people, sometimes for nothing, sometimes for misdemeanors, and slapping terrorism charges on them. And the FBI did it. And speaking of the FBI, it is weird how well January 6th worked out for Democrats. Isn't it weird? Isn't it weird how convenient that was? Which begs the question, how involved was the FBI that day?
I'm not sure that I can give you that number as I sit here. I'm not sure there were undercover agents on scene.
I find that kind of a remarkable statement, Director. At this point, you don't know whether there were undercover federal agents, FBI agents, in the crowd or in the Capitol on January 6th.
I say that because I want to be very careful. There have been a number of court filings related to some of these topics, and I want to make sure that I stick within what's in...
I understand that, but I thought I heard you say you didn't know whether there were FBI agents or informants or human sources in the Capitol or in the vicinity on January 6th. Did I misunderstand you? I thought that's what you said.
Well, I referred very specifically to undercover agents.
Yeah. And so are you acknowledging then there were undercover agents?
As I sit here right now, I do not believe there were undercover agents on scene.
Oh, the lawyers speak. And it's all in an effort to avoid perjury. Well, I don't believe, I'm not sure, but you know what that means. They were already there. Now, we'll set aside what I believe about that day. As you know, I believe the federal government did that day. I believe they had feds all over the crowd instigating that thing, trying to make it happen. So, of course, they could arrest you and arrest me if they wanted. But you know what a huge part of that day was? A huge part of the narrative? The pipe bombs. Don't you remember it? It added an extra level of spice to the whole story, didn't it? See, it's one thing for things to get a little rowdy on the steps of the Capitol. It's another thing entirely to have bombs. Thank God they didn't go off. Where were the bombs? I heard Kamala Harris was close to one. Oh my gosh. They were at the DNC. They were at the RNC. There was a bomber? And then we had that video. The picture you're looking at right now, we've actually seen him. He's in a mask. There's a bomber out there. It added spice to it, didn't it? Well, we now have the guy in our hands. And the communists are lying about who he is, and they're lying really, really hard about that. Here was CNN.
And what we've learned is that among the statements that he has made is that he believed the 2020 election was stolen. And so that appears to be the first statement that has been made in this case that might give an indication of a motive of why he may have placed these bombs in those locations.
Guy comes from a family of Democrats. Bail bonds, things like that. Why are they trying so hard? Why are they trying so hard to lie? Oh, it's not just one show either. Show after show after show. They're all out there creating the world of make-believe for your liberal Aunt Peggy, telling her this.
Maybe, you should believe what he says?
No, maybe he put a bomb at the DNC because he believed the Democrats stole the election because Republicans and conspiracy theorists pushed that. And he put the bomb at the RNC because the vice president, who was about to be sworn in was going to ride by that area. There are many scenarios that the prosecution will have to play out this case. But I'm gonna say the thing out loud that I think everyone is not saying and is actually surprised, and why I think Jeanine Pirro is actually saying it. I think the fact that this man is a black man is surprising to people. I think people thought this was gonna be a white man that did this. They were gonna be able to say he was a part of the progressive left. And the fact that it's a black man that is saying, I too was susceptible to conspiracy theorists that the president and conservative podcasters were pushing that this election was stolen, is a fact that they were not expecting, and now everyone is on their heels and they're trying to spin it. And I think that might be also why you think, let's not believe his actual story right now.
Like,
he's trying to get both sides.
It's certainly possible.
I mean, so...
Setting aside all the gross stuff, why are they working so hard to maintain the narrative that this guy was a Trump supporter putting bombs out there? Well, now for the new information. Court filings reveal that Biden, Christopher Wray's FBI, knew who this guy was in April of 2021. And let's just skip past all the obvious. Of course they knew who this guy was. This moron had his cell phone in his pocket while he was placing the pipe bombs. As soon as you walk around with your cell phone, whatever you do with it, they can just go back and track where you were and what you were doing. Of course they knew who he was. Now, that's weird when you combine that with this 2023 statement from Christopher Wray about, hey, we got no clue.
Okay. So you were able to arrest hundreds of individuals who were allowed into the Capitol, walked around, took selfies, but we can't find the individual who committed the most dangerous crime and attempted to cause multiple mass casualty events at the Capitol or around the Capitol.
Congressman, we have an entire dedicated team focused specifically on this investigation. We've done thousands of interviews, visited, again, just in the pipe bomb investigation,
okay.
Thousands of interviews, visited thousands of residents and businesses, reviewed millions of pieces of data. There's something like 39,000 video files. We've assessed like 500 or something tips. We've done extensive public publicity. We've increased the reward money. We've got our lab working on it. We've got our WMD directorate working on it. We've got our Office of Technology Division, our cellular analysis team. So the folks that we have working on this investigation are working very aggressively on it. And I, as much as anybody, would like to see it solved.
Even has the cellular analysis team. Thousands of interviews. We've turned over every rock. Nothing we can do. Let's just skip right past it. All the kid games here. They knew exactly who he was, and the FBI chose to cover it up and ignore it because the discovery that the pipe bomber was a leftist would have destroyed the narrative. The narrative the communists were using to throw your grandmother in prison. The FBI is an evil organization that cannot possibly be reformed. And by the way, as I say that, all the credit in the world to Dan Bongino, who walked in, opened up the files, and said, well, obviously we know who the freaking guy is, and they went and arrested him. Nevertheless, the FBI can no longer exist in any form, or they will, as I've told you before many times under the Biden administration, I believe the FBI will cause a civil war in this country. They will. They will destroy so many lives, end so many lives. Eventually, you'll see states join against them, rise up. It's going to be a disaster. This organization has to go away. And I distinctly remember being promised before the election that it would go away. I was told it would be broken up, sent out of D.C., and all that seems to have gone away. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Liz Wheeler is going to join us in a moment and talk about all these things. I'm going to talk first about chips. Because that made me feel bad. Chips make me feel good. I'm a chip man. I love being a chip man. It's my go-to snack. I like pretzels. They're fine. A cracker. I'll eat a Triscuit now and then. It's fine. But all this stuff is terrible for you, including the chips. It's terrible for you. It is. And now that I'm 44, I kind of feel bloated when I lay waste to a whole bag of potato chips. You know that Massa chips are not terrible for you? Salt. Corn, beef tallow, that's it. Three ingredients. No more bloating afterwards. You don't feel bad, lethargic, miserable, because there's no seed oil garbage, none of these 8,000 ingredients that look like you're eating a nuclear bomb. Just delicious chips, the best chips you've ever had in your life. Simple and delicious. And you can eat it guilt-free. Go get 3-4 bags. Try all the flavors. You can find your favorite one. The habanero one's my favorite one. Anyway, massachips.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. So this pipe bomber, Brian Cole Jr., who is he? I mean, he's not a Trump supporter, right? I don't think so. Who is he? And do we think he is the guy? Let's be honest. We are taking the word of an organization, the FBI, that lies about everything all the time. But what do we believe? Joining me now, Liz Wheeler, my friend, host of the wonderful Liz Wheeler Show. All right, Liz, let's focus first on Brian Cole Jr. Who is this guy? Obviously, he wasn't running around in a MAGA hat. Who is he? What does he believe? What do we know?
Well, we don't know a lot yet about him. I think, as you alluded to in your introduction, a lot of us who have been closely following everything that happened on January 6th, including the pipe bomb debacle, are skeptical, because we should be. We should always ask questions. We should always require verification, even from our own friends or friendlies. Brian Cole Jr. is a 30-year-old man who... And this is compelling evidence, I will say. The FBI, in their affidavit that was presented at his arraignment, show that his cell phone pinged 7 different times. And when I say pinged, that's data transmissions that were documented by AT&T, I believe, was his service provider. We don't know if they're text messages or phone calls, but 7 times within the vicinity of both the DNC headquarters and the RNC headquarters, which is compelling evidence placing him at the scene of that crime. The FBI also presented evidence that Brian Cole Jr. is the owner of a Nissan Sentra, a white Nissan Sentra, that was observed on a license plate reader being within 1/2 mile of exactly this same location, the scene of these crimes, in the same time that these pipe bombs were allegedly placed. So that's very compelling evidence. When I say skeptical, I don't necessarily think, oh, this is certainly not the pipe bomber, but there are a lot of unanswered questions about who he is. Who exactly was he talking to on those 7 data transmissions is my primary question. Was he working with anyone else? Did he have any associations with radical leftist groups, with any Democrat politician, with any leftist organizations? I think a lot of us will have a hard time believing that he was just a lone wolf, that he just, out of some kind of something, randomly placed these pipe bombs that sat undetected for 15 hours before being discovered within 15 minutes of each other and within 15 minutes of the first breach of the Capitol on January 6th. That's a little hard to believe. And so I think the questions that are yet to be answered are probably the most interesting information yet, which is why we're all kind of waiting with bated breath to find out the answers to those questions.
Okay, well, Liz, you normally have pretty sharp instincts on this stuff. I'm not asking you to give me anything concrete because we don't know. There's a lot we don't know. But is your feeling this guy was a Fed? Is your feeling maybe this was the wrong guy? I mean, look, we now know that the FBI knew who this guy was back in 2021. That's what court filings reveal. Why wouldn't they just go get him? What's your sense?
Well, I think, I don't know the answer to that question. I wish
right.
I did.
Well,
and believe me, I've been plying my sources, and we will have some new information to break on the Liz Wheeler Show, I believe, on Thursday. So everyone should tune in to that. My biggest question here, and I think this is a question that we will get an answer to at some point, is if the FBI, in fact, put together most of this data in the weeks following January 6th, if they had narrowed down their geofence data, which is collecting the cell phone pings, of people in that vicinity, if they had put that together all within weeks of January 6th, narrowed it down to 180 some phone numbers, and then narrowed it down to just one phone number, and then suddenly they stopped their investigation when they had it narrowed down to just that one phone number, Jesse, somebody at the FBI had to make that decision. That's not just a natural slowing of an investigation that kind of halts for lack of new information and hot leads. That is a deliberate political decision made by somebody to stop that investigation. And I want to know the name of that person who made that decision so that we can understand why that decision was made. That's the type of accountability I want to see from the FBI and the Department of Justice. That type of answer will also inform everyone sitting here with us today about whether this is really the guy, I mean, there are some oddities, of course, that are already being reported. He's reported as being autistic and antisocial. I think the New York Post earlier today reported that he is a brony, an adult male fan of the My Little Pony. This is a weird fetish subculture online for chronically online dudes. It's obviously, I don't need to say that it's weird. Sometimes there's a perverted sexual connotation to it. I don't know if any of his online trail indicated the perverted sexual aspect of it. I imagine we'll learn more in the coming days. So my answer is, I don't know. There's some compelling evidence that was presented by the FBI, and there's also some questions that need to be answered. So I don't think we have to fully decide whether this is the guy right now when we don't know. We just have to keep digging and wait, demand the information that will fill in the blanks.
A brony. I am so old. Everything reminds me of the fact that I am so old. All right, speaking about trust in institutions, Communist John Denver is out there saying things like this.
I do wonder what you think, like looking back to that tumultuous period of time. Do you think that teacher unions and Democrats have done enough self-examination in the role they played in pandemic school closures? Like, were there mistakes made?
Yeah, of course there were. And there were mistakes made by everyone. There was huge mistakes made by the Trump administration to not be clear, to not focus on safety as they were focusing on reopening it. Reopening became political, not became something that we all should have prioritized.
Okay, Randy Weingarten's out there blaming Donald Trump. Liz, I don't really care necessarily about her specifically, but are we ever going to get even an ounce of accountability for all the tyrants during COVID?
I was wondering who you were going to be talking about when you said Communist John Denver, and now I cannot unsee it looking at Randy Weingarten. That is so savage. That is so unfair to John Denver. Take me home, goodness. That is so mean. No, we're not going to see any accountability, and I know that sounds incredibly black-pilled, and I wish that I didn't feel this way, because I, like most Trump supporters, were so energized and so ready for the fight, so ready for justice when Trump came into office. But while I think the Trump administration, if you want to put it this way, has their heart in the right place, at least from President Trump, his Department of Justice has been very disappointing. We have not seen any significant prosecutions of any deep state swamp creatures who weaponized the federal government against us. It has been almost a year in office, and still we have seen virtually nothing but missteps from Attorney General Pam Bondi, who, I'm sorry to be harsh about someone on our own side, but I'm just looking at the facts laid in front of me. It's not just the Epstein binders and that entire debacle. It's also her missteps in the appointment of Halligan, and that leading to a judge throwing out these charges against James Comey. I mean, these are inexcusable mistakes. We are fighting against an enemy who wants us silenced and in many cases killed. We cannot have bumbling fools being at the helm of the accountability apparatus and actually expect to see accountability. So until that leadership changes, I don't believe we're going to see accountability.
You stay on them, Liz. I appreciate it. Liz, thank you. I appreciate it. All right. Savannah Hernandez is all over all this New York nonsense. You know, they're just turning these scumbags, the illegals, they're just letting them out of jail so ICE can't deport them. It's just living a bonkers world. You know what else is bonkers to me? It's bonkers that you would have Verizon, AT&T, or T-Mobile. And it's bonkers because of what we know about Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile. We know that these companies work hand in hand with the communists to hand over your information. We know that they take your money that you pay every month and they hand it to communist organizations. Remember the George Floyd protests? Yeah, funded by big corporations. Look into your mobile company. And we also know we have Pure Talk. Pure Talk's the patriotic cell phone company. They hire Americans. I'm not talking about a call center in India. Americans, right here in America, led by a Vietnam veteran. make the switch to the cell phone company that is patriotic. And oh, by the way, as a little side note, will save you a fortune. A fortune. My bill got cut in half when I switched from T-Mobile to Pure Talk. Go to puretalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
Last weekend, ICE attempted to raid Canal Street and detain our immigrant neighbors. As mayor, I'll protect the rights of every single New Yorker, and that includes the more than 3 million immigrants who call this city their home. But we can all stand up to ICE if you know your rights. Sometimes ICE will show you paperwork that looks like this and tell you that they have the right to arrest you. That is false.
ICE is legally allowed to lie to you, but you have the right to remain silent.
If you're being detained, you may always ask, am I free to go, repeatedly, until they answer you.
You are legally allowed to film ICE, as long as you do not interfere with an arrest.
New York will always welcome immigrants, and I will fight each and every day to protect, support, and celebrate our immigrant brothers and sisters.
It's just bonkers to me that that goober is not some 20-year-old idiot college student at UCLA. That's about to be the mayor of the most important city in the world. Joining me now, Savannah Hernandez, contributor at Turning Point USA. All right, Sav, well, apparently they're already turning the illegals loose on the streets. I know you spent a bunch of time up there. How are things in the old Big Apple?
Well, Jesse, after getting the Trump administration into office, they are unfortunately exactly the same because people like Zohran Mamdani get elected for mayor, and then they put out Spanish-captioned videos teaching these illegal immigrants how to, you know, properly circumvent federal immigration law. So I've been down to Canal Street not once but twice at this point, and it is still filled with illegal immigrants primarily from Africa. It's still a mess in New York City. Let's not forget that around 250,000 illegal immigrants made their way to that city since 2021. The city's already spent about $7 billion housing these people. We put them in luxury hotels. You actually have the Roosevelt Hotel up right now. And, you know, I was kind of doing a little brush up on my past reporting, and the craziest part about the Roosevelt Hotel story that a lot of people forget about is that the U.S. government actually gave $220 million to the Pakistani government, who owns the Roosevelt Hotel, to house those migrants. And instead of, you know, things getting better in 2025, we now have Zohran Mamdani, who is simply doubling down on trying to help these illegal immigrants out, who already got free everything under the sun at the expense of the American taxpayer dollars. He's making sure that they can continue to get that free ride. So truly an egregious crime against the American people, quite frankly.
Sav, because we haven't been there, you know, we haven't walked on Canal Street, we haven't walked into the Roosevelt Hotel, I just can't even imagine the smell, by the way, but can you give us some idea of how these people live? I mean, normal people have to go to work, and they have to go buy food, and the kids go to school, and can you kind of walk us through it? I know it sounds dumb, but most people aren't walking there, and they don't want to walk there. The whole town smells like weed right now anyway. What's it like?
Sure, Jesse. So actually, one of my first stories out of New York was for the Row Hotel, one of the many luxury hotels that these migrants were being put in. And in the Row Hotel, these migrants absolutely trashed the place. I mean, there were alcohol bottles everywhere. There was drugs places. There was water damage in these hotels because the migrants simply didn't care about upkeeping these areas. And so they just completely trashed them. That's what the inside of these areas looked like. And then regarding the government was feeding them. They were getting 3 meals a day, which many of which they were complaining about because they didn't think that the food was good enough for them. They were getting free Metro cards so that they could ride on the subway. And then you also had the reticketing centers in St. Bridget's. I'll never forget this story, Jesse. We sent an undercover person in there. He asked for a plane ticket to Hawaii. And let's not forget, I want to say it was about it was either like 40,000 to 60,000 plane tickets that were given to illegal immigrants for free from the city of New York to fly anywhere they wanted throughout America because, you know, New York was just so overrun and they were like, hey, let's get him out of here. Let's not forget that Jose Ibarra, who killed Lake and Riley in Georgia, actually flew to Georgia with a free plane ticket from the city of New York. So again, that's what we've lived through over the last 4 years. And then we had the Trump administration come into office and promise to crack down on illegal immigration. But, and you know what, Jesse? Actually, sorry, I'm going on a tangent about New York right now, but the DHS just released this press release last week, and it's just absolutely insane. I'm going to read off the numbers for you so I can be exact. So New York State has released almost 7,000 illegal immigrants, okay, from their jails, linked to 29 homicides, almost 25 or over 2,500 assaults, almost 200 burglaries, 305 robberies, almost 400 drug crimes, 300 weapon offenses, 207 sexual predatory offenses. Keep in mind that has to do with children as well. So these are pedophiles who are not only illegal immigrants, but tied to violent and heinous crimes that New York State had in custody. And ICE was like, hey, can you please hand them over to us instead of re-releasing them back out onto the street so we can deport them? And because New York is a sanctuary state, they were like, yeah, we're just going to go ahead and re-release them and then make the taxpayers pay ICE to go and re-find these people before they hopefully, don't re-offend, but most likely will.
Good God.
Sorry to throw all of that at you, Jesse.
No, I feel like vomiting right now. You tell me, I don't even want to ask, the story about Charles Foner. What happened?
Sure, Jesse. So again, I love New York and I follow a lot of stories out of New York because I think it's important for us to see what's going on over there. So this is a 67-year-old man who was terrified about the rising crime in New York. And because of that, he had a gun to defend himself. Now, a career criminal with 15 priors ended up charging at this man, trying to rob him. He warned the guy like, hey, please do not charge me. And the guy, of course, did. So Charles fired in self-defense. And what ended up happening is he killed this guy, and the first female district attorney of Queens, historic woman here, decided to prosecute him because he had unlicensed handguns. So they didn't prosecute him for killing this criminal who was trying to attack him, but they prosecuted him because he had a gun and he used that gun to defend himself. He's now facing 4 years in prison, probably won't be getting out until he's 71. Worst part about this case as well is that this district attorney tried to keep this innocent man in Rikers until his sentence actually starts in January of next year. So she tried to keep him from actually spending time with his family, ahead of the holiday season this year because he was such a violent criminal, apparently. So that's what's going on in New York City, in New York State. It's horrific, quite frankly.
That sounds awful. Good God. Sav, thank you. As always, come back soon. All right, the midterms are coming. I know it feels like it's like a train is coming down the tracks and we're tied on it like an old Western film, but we have to tackle it. We have to try to win the midterms. Mary Margaret Olihan's going to join us next, find out what the Trump administration is planning on that. Before we get to Mary Margaret, I want to talk to you about a good night's sleep because Lord knows that might be hard to come by. Or, let's be honest, it's the Christmas season. Sometimes it's too much caffeine, too much family. You just want to collapse at the end of the day and get a good night's sleep. So how do you make sure you're going to do that? Well, that's where Dream Powder comes in. What is Dream Powder? Well, I know it sounds exotic, but it's hot chocolate. It's kind of special hot chocolate, though. It has all kinds of natural things in it that will have you drift off to a natural sleep. You will sleep like a little baby. And when you wake up, you will not be groggy and miserable and in a fog because you didn't take something from a pill bottle. You'll wake up and feel amazing. Have a cup of hot chocolate before bed and sleep well every night. Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
He's going to have a fun next year, but we're going to put him on the campaign trail, too. Typically, just a little bit of campaign speak, if I may.
Yeah.
Typically, you in the midterms, it's not about who's sitting at the White House. It's you localize the election.
Right.
And you keep the federal officials out of it. We're actually going to turn that on its head.
Good.
And put him on the ballot because so many of those low propensity voters are Trump voters.
Yes, they are.
And we saw a week ago Tuesday, what happens when he's not on the ballot and not active. So I haven't quite broken it to him yet, but he's going to campaign like it's 2024.
I like it. Joining me now, Mary Margaret Olihan. She'll have the skinny on all this stuff. White House correspondent for the Daily Wire. All right, Mary Margaret, are they feeling desperation, just feeling a little heat? It's quite a thing to ask the 80-year-old president to get back out on the campaign trail when he's done having to win elections. What's going on?
Well, I think a couple things are going on, Jesse. For one thing, Trump has never really acted like an 80-year-old president. He's very active. He's very engaged with the media pretty much at all times. I see him at the White House multiple times a day. But at the same time, there is this element among the Republican Party right now, among reporters. You hear this question a lot at the White House, is how is the White House going to help with the midterms? Because we all know it's not going to be the walk in the park that Republicans might hope that it would be. And many people are pointing to the Tennessee election as a good example of that. It should have been a much easier GOP win than it was. It involved a lot of money. It involved a lot of attention. It involved the president pushing for support for this Tennessee candidate many times. So this is something that everyone is aware of. I think we heard from White House reporters, the legacy reporters, a lot that they believe that Republicans are really going to struggle in the midterm. So they asked the president, do you think that this is going to require much more attention from you? And I think Susie Wiles weighing in on this is a good example of that the White House is aware that Trump needs to be very involved. And we all know that really Republicans only are winning right now when Trump is on the ballot. When people come out for Trump, they come out for Republicans. And when Trump's not on the ballot, they really do badly. So sounds like Susie and the White House and the president are trying their best to put Trump on the ballot once again, to get him out there, to get people fired up. And I thought it was interesting, she said, I haven't really told him yet, but he'll find out. It just shows you how much influence and power that Susie Wiles has in the White House, where she would, discuss her and the president's relationship that way. It tells you a lot.
Mary, it does tell you a lot about the power this woman has. What is your feeling on the reason for, I don't want to call it impending doom, but there is definitely a feeling on the right, amongst normies, amongst people who do what we do, that the midterms are not going to go our way. Some say it's going to be a bloodbath. Some say we're going to lose the House. Why? Why do they feel that way? What is it the GOP isn't doing or Democrats are doing?
Well, I think many people are correctly assessing that the GOP is very divided right now. There is massive contention, argument, hatred, all of these different things that are just boiling within the Republican Party right now, many of them tied actually to the death of Charlie Kirk and how people are handling his death, how they are communicating with one another, and how they are looking at the country and assessing what needs to be done. And so I think when you look at the state of the Republican Party right now, there are lawmakers who are not super interested in the midterms. They're not super interested in securing victory for Republicans. There's also lawmakers who are out there doing their own thing. You have people like Marjorie Taylor Greene who are resigning from office. You have murmurs that other people are resigning from office as well, murmurs that people want to and are afraid to. We don't know if that's true necessarily, but all of this is contributing to an element of unease right now. But at the same time, we have the President of the United States, Donald Trump. We have J.D. Vance. Both of them are very confident and are posturing confidently towards the midterms. I think that's something that Republicans should look to, hopefully. I think also, if Republicans were smart, they would point to the death of Charlie Kirk, someone who was a valiant hero for the Republican Party, strongly desired to see Republicans win, put a lot of time and money and effort, and some would say his life, into defending the Republican Party and ensuring these wins. And so if Republicans really want to do honor to Charlie Kirk, to his death, they would really lean into this and point to how he cared about the vision of this country, how he promoted this country as they're looking to secure victories in the midterms. But really, a lot of this boils down to the contention that we have seen over the past 6 months. And it's sad, Jesse, it is. But there's a lot of opportunity for growth, a lot of opportunity for coordination here if Republicans only take the opportunity.
Mary, let's talk about these resignations and retirements. And I'm well aware, as wired in as you are in D.C., that politicians are in general all full of crap. So you have to take what they say at face value. I get that. Yeah. But why? Why? What is the over-encompassing reason? Do they think they're going to lose? They don't want to be in the minority? Are they specifically disheartened about a policy when it comes to this or that? Because there does seem like there's been a lot of them.
Yeah, it is. It's interesting, Jesse. I think one main feeling is that, you know, these Republican lawmakers and lawmakers across the board don't really like to be told what to do. And so there definitely is a climate right now where they know they do have to do what the president of the United States wants. And if they don't stay in shape and if they don't do what Trump is asking them to, then they will be called out publicly. For some of them, it's probably getting old. For some of them, they probably are tired of it and would like to be their own master. But at the same time, like you're saying, I think a lot of them are full of it. If they are suggesting that they're going to resign, we know that there's nothing that lawmakers in D.C. like more than being a lawmaker in D.C. They like having the power. They like having the position. So I'd be surprised if we see too many more resignations. But at the same time, there is an element of people having to step up, having to do their jobs, having to pull through, having to be in D.C. And I'm sure that that's wearing on some. The rest, I guess we'll have to watch and see how things play out. I don't think we'll see too many more Marjorie Taylor Greene situations. She has not, I would say, fared well in the era, in the sphere of public opinion right now, but you never know.
Maybe it's the food. I'm always shocked whenever I have to go back to that wretched city, with all due respect, at how terrible the food situation is.
Hey,
with
no,
all that
we've
money,
got great food here.
No, no, you don't, Mary. That's a lie. No, you don't. There's some chili dogs in a couple steak houses. No, you don't. Okay, let's shift focus on something I know you're passionate about. All the tranny madness. Are we finally done with all this crap of pretending that we can chop a boy's penis off and make him a woman? It feels like we're coming out of that demonic phase, but I don't want to overstate it. Are we?
Well, Jesse, look, you and I have talked about this a lot. I mean, you know, I've talked to you about the book I wrote on detransitioners, mm-hmm. people who tried to transition and then realized it's impossible and went back to living as themselves. You know, this is a long, hard fight. We saw so many people, especially young people, 2019, 2020, coming out, trying to transition, suffering the horrible consequences of it. But what's really amazing, and I was just saying this to someone last night about this situation, is once President Trump took office, a lot of the stuff that I've been writing about, that I've been talking to you about, it just kind of vanished overnight because the president enacted these executive orders and took action. So whether it's the pro-lifers who are being targeted by the DOJ, whether it was kids that were being pushed into these gender transition procedures, a lot of this is going away. But we're also still seeing some great actors around the country that are picking up, you know, they're dealing with the last remnants of this. For example, in Florida, James Ousmeyer, the Florida's attorney general, he just sued a bunch of these organizations that were pushing transgender procedures on kids. It's a huge, massive step towards justice in this area because these were the organizations that were encouraging kids to go down this path. These were the so-called medical groups that were saying that it was good for kids to do these types of things, that it was healthy, that it was so-called care for kids to undergo these procedures. So that's a very interesting, exciting step in Florida. But I will say, again, if you look around the country, we are seeing many less instances of this. And what we need, and I'm hearing from gender activists, is justice for the kids, looking at the doctors that were pushing this, and looking around the country to see if anyone is trying to do things on the sly. If anyone is pushing these types of procedures or helping kids get hormones that they shouldn't be getting, that's definitely something that gender activists who are anti these procedures for kids have been telling me. But the president is still very vocal about this. Anytime I ask Caroline Leavitt about this, she comes down hard in favor of protecting children, in favor of punishing those who are pushing these types of things on kids. And I will also say, Jesse, that public sentiment is strongly in favor of protecting kids. Public sentiment is strongly in favor of keeping men out of women's sports. The public does not appreciate these things. And as the president has often said on the campaign trail and in the White House, the people don't want this. It's crazy. He used the word crazy, and I thought that was pretty smart of him because he's harnessing your gut reaction, your natural reaction to this type of thing, which is that it's crazy and it's unacceptable. But you never know. Let's say we have a President Newsom in the next election. A lot of the president's work could be undone. Maybe if we have a Republican in office, things will go well, better for a little while. We can keep things moving strongly in that direction. But a Democrat could undo a lot of it. So we're also hearing calls for state legislation, for federal legislation, and again, for these doctors and medical organizations to be punished.
President Newsom. Oh, that's just nasty. Mary, thank you. I appreciate it. Lighten the mood. Next. All right, it's time to lighten the mood. And I'll be honest, I'm unreasonably excited for Jasmine Crockett's Senate run in the state of Texas, because it's going to provide so much entertainment for you and me. And I'm not going to spend a long time on it because we're going to hear so much about it. But just know, this was her introduction.
Let's get into it.
Okay. She ain't never scared if she ain't never been. Who is willing to go toe-to-toe against the president? I can't wrap my head around someone who votes Republican. She advocate for feeding kids. They protect folks touching them. Trump invading his own country with our army. What a joke. We remember Pearl Harbor by illegally bombing boats. What y'all thought we wasn't gonna do nothing, buddy? Think again. They only trying to scare out of running because they think she'll win. Listen, thought I told y'all we ain't never scared. Now look who name on the docket. Got two words for every racist bigot: Jasmine Crockett.
Y'all hear the words.
Me, I hope my money goes to side that isn't trying to say affordabilities. I hope she stand on business. Austin.
She does, in fact, stand on business. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.